Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
He's your radio friend with lots and lots of good health information and advice. It's the Power of Health with Dr. Jeffrey Burke.
I'm here with Natasha Trenev, and we're talking probiotics. And, you know, we recently talked about the stability factors and the oil enrobing process that she does in her laboratories, you know, to be able to help not only the viability of individual strains or multi-strain products, but also keep them healthy and strong. So when we as the consumer pick our products up at the store, when we get them home, when we're using them, the viability and the absorbability of them, it's something we can rely on. And, you know, you had mentioned one time, Natasha, how these strains, individual strains, have a tendency to, even though they're all healthy in their own right, but when they're put into a small space, they turn on their own, if you will.
Yeah, they do. The whole objective of bacteria is to procreate its own kind in large numbers. So luckily for us, the beneficial bacteria produce beneficial byproducts that help us, not harm us, and the pathogenic bacteria produce byproducts that harm us. But what people are totally ignorant of, that, you know, even beneficial bacteria will knock each other out. I'll give you the most famous case, is that for maybe 20, 25 years, yogurt manufacturers were trying to add Lactobacillus acidophilus to yogurt to make it more probiotic. And no matter what they did, because that's a wet mixture and the bacteria are growing aggressively, the yogurt bacteria would attack the L. acidophilus and it would die. So by the time the consumer got it, there was no L. acidophilus in the product. And simply because it was a turf war. And that's the simplest example I can give you. This has been shown in multiple, maybe dozens of tests. And that's why they don't put L. acidophilus in yogurt. They put other bacteria which may survive somewhat, but still not in the kind of numbers and not de-stressed by the time it reaches your lips. And this is where I warn people that if you think you're consuming a probiotic yogurt, yogurt in itself is a probiotic functional food because it contains two beneficial bacteria that ferment the milk and make it more digestible and absorbable by the body. But they don't provide you large numbers of these beneficial bacteria that have a huge impact on that 100 trillion microbes lining your GI tract. So when they try to, add these so-called other probiotic bacteria to yogurt, most people were fooled because the numbers that survive are insignificant, and many of them are killed within the first couple of weeks that the product is on the shelf. But you see, the government doesn't test these products, and since the yogurt or kefir or drinkable probiotic, the government doesn't force these people to tell you what a potency is of this bacteria through an expiry date, you have no clue what you're getting. After 2 weeks, it could be a die-off so rapid that there would be 10 times less than what the product had in the beginning when it was fermented. So I think as a informed consumer, that should be a huge concern for anyone who thinks that by eating a yogurt that has approximately 25 grams of carbohydrates and really kills you with your diet, in the hopes of getting some form or amount of probiotic bacteria, is totally clueless and wasting their money and time.
You know, we hear the word probiotic thrown around a lot, and obviously if you were to ask 100 people on the street, they probably would say, oh yeah, I've heard about probiotics for your stomach, or, you know, isn't that yogurt, or, you know, you get a lot of different answers. But I bet if we were to ask 100 people about, do they give probiotics to their pets, they probably would say, you can give probiotics to your pets? I think it's another whole segment that we haven't spent a lot of time on, but boy, there's tons of information on probiotics for animals.
Oh, yeah. In fact, it was the first area, you know, I would say farm animals, and now we're talking about domestic animals because, you know, mammals in general, we share this affinity for bacteria. In fact, every living creature on the planet has some kind of a relationship with bacteria that's good and bad. So same thing with our, you know, companions, our beloved cats and dogs and birds and so forth. Now, these animals also have a digestive tract, and believe it or not, what we have found that the same L. acidophilus that is great for humans in their small intestine is great for cats and dogs. And there's a number of studies that support that, that one of the most beneficial probiotic bacteria for dogs and cats is Lactobacillus acidophilus. And it predominates in the canine small intestine. And this was a 2015 study on dogs that found that Lactobacillus acidophilus was the most and predominant lactobacilli in the canine small intestine. And the study also showed that this acidophilus provided intestinal barriers. In other words, the barrier in the intestine is very important so that larger particles of food matter are not absorbed through the GI tract, which causes a reaction in the immune system, which thereby causes inflammation. So by making sure that the food is pre-digested the same way it is for the human being, for dogs and cats, reduces the inflammatory cycle and therefore, you know, reduces inflammation.
Now, how do we decide the best product for our animals? And do dogs and cats, I mean, want to clarify, there are dog people and cat people out there. Can they use the same kind of product or are they different?
Well, we have products that are called canine and feline dophilus. And the products can be given to your cat and dog based on research that I did with a very prominent veterinary doctor in Germany about 25 years ago. And, you know, both of these products contain an L. acidophilus, which has been found in studies to be great for both cats and dogs. And, you know, these products can be given in a very popular syringe with a gel carrier, which means that each dose is measured and has exactly in that dose what's claimed on the label as the dosage amount. And that's just as important for your pet as it is for the human being. And we also have a powdered version called a gastroveggidophilus that, you know, can be used also for all pets, including birds or, you know, reptiles. So these products that we have were studied, were put together with the help of veterinary doctors, and they're all, you know, made to specifically assist the animal with their health. Now, why is this so important? Because you know, since the early 2000s, there were studies about both cats and dogs having what we call these calcium or urinary stones. And this seems to be a big problem both for cats and dogs. And these studies that are prevalent and found in the veterinary literature state specifically that L. acidophilus breaks up these calcium oxalate, which causes this urolithiasis. Which is a very painful and unnecessary problem for your pet to have if you give him the right supplementation of probiotics. Now, the unfortunate part is that, you know, the farmers who give the probiotics to their farm animals are much more vigilant than the veterinary doctors or the consumer who gets these probiotics for their pets, because the same kind of, you know, what I call sleight of hand a game is going on with the labels of these products. And as I stated in an earlier segment, that, you know, in 2011, a veterinary study published in a very prestigious veterinary journal found that only 2 out of the 25 veterinary products tested for dogs and cats had labels that appropriately described the contents of the product at the time they tested them, or had, you know, the relevant amount of potency that was stated on the label. Now, that's horrendous. And but they found that none of the products really correctly listed the genus, the species, and the strain. The 2 products that they found had correct labels did list the species and the genus, but they had no strain reference. And, you know, I believe that these products were lucky because they were probably picked up off the shelf at a time when they didn't have massive exposure. So, you know, if you're buying probiotics for your cat and dog, The same applies as it does to humans. If the product is not kept cool and dry and protected by refrigeration, you're probably wasting your money. And the people selling these products are either cat and dog food manufacturers, and they don't have a clue about what it takes to keep probiotic beneficial bacteria alive and viable so that they can actually help your pet. And that's why some of the reports are spotty, because, again, there is no independent agency, when I mean totally independent, not accepting money or membership fees from the so-called manufacturer that's testing these products and validating that they actually have in the product what they claim in the label. So the same problem exists for human probiotics as it exists for our cat, our dog, our horses, and our birds.
Now, let me ask you a question. We see functional foods out there all the time where, you know, candies and crackers and all different kinds of things that'll say with probiotics on the label. And obviously we know that when they're added in with all these carbohydrates and sugars and chemicals, we're not going to get very much of an absorbability. We know that. But I also, when I was at the pet store just recently, I saw some things on the shelf that said with probiotics on them. Are these basically kind of functional foods for animals?
No, they're actually dead.
They're dead.
Let me just tell you what the processes are, so that you can, as a listener, you can arm yourself with some, information. And the reason I can speak intelligently, because while I was still a student at UCLA in 1969, I helped pass the liquid yogurt standard in the state of California that allowed the introduction of kefir, which nobody could understand in that era, didn't even know what the heck we were talking about. And then in the early 1980s, I was invited by the state of New York to give testimony to set a real standard for kefir for the state of New York, because people coming in from the former Soviet Union were protesting that the products they were buying in the store were not real kefir that they had at home. So you can see in that one small explanation, the lack of scrutiny by, state governments or the federal government in even labeling products that are found in ethnic cultures and that people are used to consuming. So that standard in New York allowed another manufacturer of kefir in Illinois to make the product. Now, what you have to discern is that when there's real fermentation going on, meaning of the bacteria, that some agency says, okay, there is a standard, and these bacteria are now culturing the milk and making a yogurt or a kefir. And I would tell you unequivocally, as a former manufacturer of yogurt and kefir, that all these products that are filled with fruit flavorers and even honey contain way too many carbohydrates. And it really gives you an excuse to eat products that are not really designed to give you optimal health, because that sugar is feeding the undesirable microbes, where the small amount of probiotic bacteria used in the fermentation process is giving you some bacteria. Now, that's one problem. The second problem, where you have candies, pizzas, whatever on the shelf claiming to have probiotic product, probiotic bacteria, those products have no living organisms, because A, there's no fermentation going on, and B, whatever organisms they put in there, nobody knows the amount and if they're really alive and viable when you consume them. So now you're giving yourself permission to eat what I call junk food, because there's something on the label that says that they contain probiotics. The same concept was adopted by, dog and cat food manufacturers, that they're going to enhance the sale of their product by saying on the label that it contains some probiotics, but there's nobody checking to see if it actually, number one, has any probiotic products, and two, if any of those products are viable when you give it to your cat and dog. All that's doing is it's costing you more money, and you think that you now have helped your animal, which may not be the truth at all. And this is what's the most troubling part of this business.
When we do give our pets a viable source of a probiotic and we administer it correctly, do we have to look for any changes in their health, in their stools, Will they start increasing their appetite a little bit now that things start assimilating better? Or if they're eating and eating and eating and not gaining any weight, I mean, will those things get a little better as well? I mean, as it starts to reset their guts, just like it resets ours.
Well, first of all, yes. You know, you will see that animals who have a problem with digestion and may have a problem with the luster of their fur or may have, you know, fungal spots, you know, on, and loss of fur, there is a change depending on, first of all, the severity of the problem in the animal. You know, it may take longer, but if the animal is not that compromised, you can see results within 24 or 48 hours. Because remember, each ecosystem, whether it's inside the human being or inside an animal, is unique. And there's nobody that's figured out a methodology to figure out what the disturbance is and how long you have to take it. So you may have to, A, monitor what you're feeding the dog, what is the same thing I talk about humans, what exercise regimen you have, and how much probiotics you're giving to the dog. And they have to be measured probiotics, like the ones that we sell that guarantee a potency, and you can rely on the manufacturer. The problem is, again, because this is such a complex science, it opens up a huge door for cheating, not only for human probiotics, but for animal probiotics. And it's very disconcerting because there's really no reliable third-party agency that's checking the label and checking to make sure that what's stated is there is really there in the product.
When another question for you, larger animals, smaller animals, do we dose them differently?
Yes. Okay. You know, usually, you know, larger animals you give larger amounts to, and smaller animals you can get away with smaller amounts. And here's the caveat. If, let's say, the smaller animal has severe diarrhea, yeah, you want to keep dosing them, you know, frequently and with larger doses. And if the large animal doesn't have a severe problem, then, you know, a regular dose is suggested on the label will be just fine. The point is that you want to get a probiotic from a manufacturer that's safe at any level when you give it to your pet. This is the whole purpose of probiotics, that they are safe at any level. And if you don't know the manufacturer, and if they don't specialize, and they don't actually make the product that they're selling to you, the human being, or your pet, you should have a lot of questions, because you want to make sure, first, A, that the organisms are safe, and B, that, you know, if need be, you can increase the frequency and the dosing in order to get the desired health benefit for your pet, you know, within a couple of days.
Now, I think I know how you're going to answer this, but people will say, well, my animals are really healthy right now. When do I decide to give them probiotics? I look at it this way. My puppies get probiotics almost all the way through their lifetime. I mean, I start them early, long before there's any signs that they really need it. I believe, in a preventive protocol. Am I right?
You are absolutely right, because what most people, again, are ignorant of, that the water, the food, whether it's for your pet or yourself, contains large loads of bacteria. And the reason you don't get sick is because it's not a large enough dose to make you sick. It's the same thing with what's happened with the environment. In the last 10 years, the resistant bacteria that were previously only found in hospitals have now gone into the environment. And if you look at the statistics of, you know, the cancers and diseases in animals, it's skyrocketed since the 1970s. I don't have the stats. I would be interested to look at them. But, you know, animals are not healthy. And I think what every animal lover should do is, A, find the right diet for their dog. For instance, I had a beautiful American Eskimo, and I never tried to save money. The only thing this dog could eat was lamb and rice. And I made sure that nobody fed this dog anything except the lamb and rice, and he got his canine Dophilus every day. And I can proudly say that the only thing that took this dog away from me at 16 years old was old age. And that, you know, this animal never had a sick day in his life, and it's the same thing with my Burmese cat. You know, when I got her from the breeder, she had problems with her eyes. They were, you know, constantly getting infected, and I used to wash them with boric acid solution and gave her the feline Dophilus, watched her food, and the same thing with the cat. This cat never had a sick day in her life, And the only reasons they would go to the vet is to get their annual shots. And this should be the objective of every person, not only for their animals, but for themselves.
Well, you know, I think today, you know, breeders are different. I mean, dogs are being crossbred and bred very, very tightly within the bloodlines, you know, line breeding and stuff. And these animals are coming out and they're already having some compromised digestive systems when they're very, very young. And I think a lot of people just wait until there's an issue. And the preventive nature that we apply to our own selves, hopefully, is not something that we think about with our animals. And it really would make a big difference in their long-term health, but also avoidance of being at the vet so many times when they get older.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you, I've been, you know, when I go in for our annual shots with the cat and the dog, I can't tell you how many people would crowd the waiting room and slip out their credit card and get charged $1,200, $2,000. It was just, like, mind-boggling. And I can tell you in the years that I've taken my pet for the vet for their annual physical or their, you know, annual shots, it would just blow my mind how many more people were coming in with sick animals and the stories I would hear. But, you know, the bottom line, Jeffrey, is whether it's for your companion animal or for the human being, digestion is everything. Because if you think of your digestive tract, whether you're an animal or human being, it's the way you allow the outside world to come into your inside world. And that's where all this food is processed, and it has to pass the intestinal barrier into the blood in order to nourish your body, not in the meantime, not to upset the 80% of immune cells that line that GI tract and the 100 million neurons that line that GI tract. So it's a very delicate process to make sure that none of these things are aggravated and that the communication between the immune cells and the bacteria in the gut and the neurons that compose the second brain, that everybody's getting along, whether it's an animal or a human being, and that it's not being aggravated, because if it is aggravated, you're going to have problems, and it's only a matter of time.
If you get in a pinch and you're using the Healthy Trinity yourself and you run out for your animals, can you give them the Healthy Trinity?
Absolutely. Any one of our product, this is the beauty of our product. You can give any of the human products to the animals because all of our products have been found to be compatible with human beings and animals. This is what makes the products unique, that you can't make a mistake. You can't give anything in our product line that would upset the animal or the human being.
Okay. You know, I think that a lot of animals...
That's very important.
Oh, it's very, very important. And, you know, and like I said, you know, animals are not just animals anymore. They are vital, viable parts of our family. And, you know, we mourn their losses and we suffer with them when they're ill. And, you know, with a couple extra steps, we might be able to dramatically change the course of their health.
Absolutely. You know, it's why I've been in this field for 45 years and I don't do line extensions. I only educate and sell about probiotics and sell probiotics because this is so important for every human being on this planet to understand that it really, I can't tell you that there's nothing more important for people to understand, because if we as human beings are 90% bacterial cells and only 10% human cells, that is the whole difference. And there is, you know, so many organizations now, the Organization for Microbiota or Microbiome. Every day I can tell you there's published literature in one field or another talking about these probiotics and how they impact our lives.
You know, this is really good information, and I think a lot of people out there, people are pet lovers today, you know, and we want our pets to be happy, and, you know, it's nice to know what to look for and what to ask for. And the information about, you know, looking toward those functional animal foods, something else we need to look for, because we need to be looking at our own functional foods that we're eating and start really taking a good look at the label and getting the truth.
Oh, absolutely. And if there's one takeaway I want people to take from this show is that, you know what, you have to have somebody that specializes in probiotics. They have to make their own probiotics. They have to research them. You have to make certain that the products are safe, number one, and number two, effective. And those are the two criteria. And it's probably the most important concept you can invest your time and energy to understand, because it does make a difference not only in your health, but in your pet's health as well.
Well, I think this was wonderful. I thank you for talking about the pet health today. Well, you've got as much passion about the pet health as you do the people health. How wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Listen, every animal I've ever owned never died of a disease. That's all I can tell you.
Well, that means something right was going on along the way. And, you know, in learning their diets and learning what they should be eating and saying no to people food for the pets, that's a big issue for a lot of people.
Oh, listen, I was militant about that. Nobody gave the dog any food off the table, or that the dog didn't eat anything that, could upset the GI tract. Or, it's like, giving dog chocolate. The dog will die if you give him chocolate. So just think about the other food that you give off the table that may be as harmful to the dog as the chocolate.
Yeah. Great topics today. We talked about, reading bottles, looking at strains, and learning how to learn about what's inside the bottle, talking about the oil enrobing process, which keeps the products viable within the same bottle. They basically get along more successfully, and then we get the end result that we're trying to achieve. And, of course, the importance of pet probiotics and choosing them wisely as well to make sure that our pets have a better digestive system. We hear all the time, our pets have bad breath, they have a smelly stool, they have bad gas. Well, it starts in their gut just like it does in ours. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Burke. This is The Power of Health on Radio MD. For more information on this show and to download the on-demand podcast segments, visit my show page at radiomd.com and my website, radiowithjeff.com. I thank you for tuning in. Be well.